You're listening to the Folkcast interview special for November 2007 with our special guest, Abby Lathe.
This month, we're releasing a separate podcast featuring an exclusive Folkcast interview with the Shropshire-based singer, songwriter, musician and teacher, Abby Lathe.
Having completed four national tours and two highly successful albums as one third of Maddie Pryor and The Girls, Abby is now enjoying a flourishing solo career.
From Abby's fourth album, Low Summer, which came out earlier this year, this is her award-winning self-penned song, Broken.
Like an empty eggshell on a pavement, broken. Like a china doll fallen, so a future present time got transfixed by the sublime, blinded by the sunshine. Love like that is hard to find. Shell on a pavement, broken, like a china doll fallen.
Hello, Abby Lathe. Welcome to Folkcast.
Indeed.
Hello.
And so you're living in Shropshire now, aren't you?
I do, yes, back in my home county.
Well, that's where you come from.
It is,
obviously.
Yeah, wonderful place.
And you have a new album available at the moment.
I do. Well, it's newly released, but I actually did it nearly 2 years ago, actually. Yeah, it was. I sort of released it on my own, which wasn't really released. They sort of let it out there a little bit, but it's now been properly released by a record company. So, yes, officially released recently.
Mm. Now, apparently, Phil was telling me earlier, you were saying that there was a song that...
Yes, I read on the website, I think it was your website, Abby, that the song Broken actually helped with the release of the album.
Well, it did, and that song is actually... That song came from, as you can probably tell, being heartbroken, and in the middle of the night I just got up and you know, spewed it out, as you do, and the young gentleman concerned heard that song 8 months later and got back in touch, and we're now back together. So not only did it get me a record deal, but it got me my romance back as well, so it's cool. And yeah, the Angelic Records, it was a song competition run by Angelic Records, and... Yeah, it came second, but it almost came first, but got pipped at the post.
Oh, wow.
But rather funny story there, because it got pipped at the post by Bill Oddie's daughter, Rosie Oddie. And I'd seen Bill just a few weeks previous to that. I'd just met him at a party, and he was talking about his clever daughter and what she could do with her songs. And I said, oh, why don't you get her to put it into the song competition that I've gone in for? And he said, oh, I don't think she'll bother. And then she did and beat me, the cow.
Well, that'll teach you.
Indeed. A great songwriter, of course, Bill Oddie. He did some fantastic songs with the Cambridge Review and then Into the Goodies and other things like that. So,
yeah. Yes. Goody.
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't do much of that now that he's Britain's royal birdwatcher, but not much call for songwriting in that job, I suppose. But,
probably not.
Yeah. Just to go back to what you were saying about returning to Shropshire, your home county, that's...
Yeah.
Presumably that's sort of like the culmination of a process for you, because a lot of your early musical life was almost running away from life in this country and getting away abroad and finding new sounds and all that sort of thing.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes, completely. I think everyone goes through that, don't they, where they just want to get away. It's probably just a wider version of getting away from the parents and the family, I suppose. Just going out, travelling, doing as much as possible, and then finally, I think when you hit your 40s, isn't it? You suddenly think, oh, I want to put some roots down and it's definitely true what they say about roots. I feel so at home here. It's amazing.
Most people sort of solve that by, I don't know, going to the pub or maybe moving to another town, but you went a bit further than that.
Well, I went to Sicily for a while, which was fantastic, looking after horses. And I went to Switzerland. I can't remember what I did there, lots of skivvying and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I didn't want to go on holiday to these places because I wanted to actually sort of be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I lived in both those places for about a year, actually.
So was it a case of having to get away for a certain distance so you could get perspective on what was what you had here?
Possibly. I think when you grow up in the sticks, as it were, there's that sense that there's this huge world out there and you're stuck with the pigs and the cows or whatever and a few sheep and farm buildings and you think, I'm never going to go anywhere in life if I stay here. So there is a sort of getting out there. And a lot of people go to the city, but that didn't appeal to me. So yeah, you could be right. Perspective. Yeah. It certainly does give you perspective. And just a way of trying to find out who you are, just that thing when you're surrounded by all the familiar, you just fall into patterns.
But
when you go somewhere completely unfamiliar and just immerse yourself into a whole different world, you do learn a lot about yourself quite quickly.
Absolutely.
Where has your spirit gone? Beautiful heart of old England, once so proud you stood, sacred and treasured. I am standing here in the heart of old England, sunrise through your stones, astronomically measured, and I'm feeling humble. Makes me emotional. There's a magic here, pushing through the damage done. I can't believe who would try to spoil magnificence. So I turn away, ashamed to face that we have become two tribes at war, and I'm feeling responsible, and it makes me emotional. Thinking of us, what use is there in fighting? Come together, join hearts. Trying to fit in, you want to belong. But when you're dead and gone, we'll still be standing.
Were you in the music biz or immersed in the folk world at that time? Where were you as far as music was concerned?
Where was I at that time? I kind of folky, really. I was in, when I came back in my very early 20s, I became part of a little folk band, and we did tunes and songs, and one of the chaps was very heavily influenced by Bob Dylan, so it was a fantastic little band. I mean, we thought we were absolutely, the booze news, and a little bit arrogant, I think, but we were quite young. So, yeah, folky, really.
When was this, exactly?
early 20s. I don't know, I'm not very good at, I don't know, when was I? I'm now 40, so, yeah, about 20 years ago. Good Lord. Uh-huh. It was a little band called Tripping Upstairs, and I do...
Oh, I remember.
I get people getting into... I mean, we we did all right, really, down south.
Yeah, I'm very interested in all these instruments, all these different things that you play, and I just wondered if you grew up very much in a musical environment, or if it was just something that happened by chance.
No, I'll tell you, the sad truth is I was a sort of weird, lonely kid, actually, I think is probably what it is, because I went to live with my dad when I was 9, and he lived in a little country hotel here in Shropshire. So there was an awful lot of, 6 o'clock came, the bar opened, I was just upstairs sort of sitting around twiddling my thumbs. And I just a bit bored and a bit lonely, so I used to play the piano and sort of anything else I could find, really.
Mm-hmm.
And I think lately I've got more, with the fantastic technology, I've got into being able to play things really badly and even patch it up enough to make it sound good. It's probably the truth, actually, there. Guitar and piano and whistle are my thing, really.
But we were intrigued by some of the names on the album, some of these
yes.
instruments.
Yes, and the instruments you play on the track called Therapy, the opening track on the, on the album, which allegedly include Egyptian oud, melodica, auto harp, ruler and submarine.
the submarine, yes, the submarine. Actually, that was just me going, a big echo, but I had to put that there. But that was, I felt that was a real a music therapy session for little old me on my own in Maddie's barn up in Cumbria. And, I had a fantastic time playing lots of weird instruments. Actually, that's my favourite track on the album. Mm. Nobody else seems to like that track, but I love it.
I just had this wonderful image of a submarine in the barn, you hitting it with the ruler.
It's 3 o'clock and I can't sleep. Something on my mind that just won't keep. My right hand says the left is wrong, but it's the left and that wrote this bloody song. What am I supposed to do with all this? What am I supposed to do with all this? How am I supposed to make sense of this? Head and heart, you're confusing me. When you challenge my integrity, true to who I ask myself, is it a simple question of mental health? How am I supposed to make sense of this? And what am I supposed to do with all this? And what am I supposed to do with all this?
It's always the case that when you make an album, the tracks that you think are really good, no one else says anything about.
No, that's strange, isn't it? Maybe it's more to do with, maybe when you're completely connected with what's going on for you, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to connect with anyone else at all.
No.
And I think I've had a lot of trouble over the years, actually. You're starting to write and the flow, the muse is there and it's all flowing. And then the filter comes through, like, ooh, perhaps people won't like this, or perhaps my dad won't like this, or something it starts to get filtered quite quickly. And one of the reasons I came back to Shropshire was to get rid of that filter, actually, and it did work to a certain extent. Having said that, the therapy track was done up at up in Cumbria. But perhaps that's it. I think my real music closest to my heart is so weird and strange that I can't see that many people would like it, really. Although it's proving different. I thought this album seems to be getting a lot better reviews than I was expecting. This was my real sort of I don't really care what anyone thinks album. This is just I really need to get this stuff out type thing. So they say that when you let go of something, that's when things start to happen, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I keep letting go and expect it to happen. I'm still letting go, you know.
Still letting go. God, how irritating, eh? Yeah, and it just goes to show that there's no point doing anything with any other motive than just to do it, you know, just for its sake in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. You mentioned your work with Maddie there. How did that all come about?
Well, that was very exciting, really. That was, because as you can tell, I always did music and always put stuff together and would make cassettes and CDs and things and hand them out to the family who would sort of smile sweetly. It's like, oh God, not another one. But anyway, they took it nicely. And then there came an album called Autumn, which I felt quite proud of more than the others. So I handed it out to a few more people, not just friends and family. And one of those people left it at someone's house, and that someone works for Park Records. And Maddie was looking for a multi-instrumentalist who could sing to fill a gap in a small tour she was going to do. And the chap played the album Autumn to John at Park Records. He played it to Maddie over the phone, and she said, oh, that sounds really good. Yes, let's send her up. So, and that was that. Okay, went up on a train, and I met Maddie and Rose, and we had a little session, and it just clicked immediately, you know, straight into lovely three-part harmony stuff, and that was it. So talk about serendipity. Things meant to be and all that.
Yes.
And from that, several tours, a couple of albums.
Yeah. It all sort of a real springboard.
Yeah.
And, it's been absolutely fantastic, actually. Maddie's a dear friend of mine. We do a lot of work teaching together now.
Well, that's an interesting side of your career that we should talk about. The song workshops that you do.
Singing workshops,
not song workshops. Is there a difference?
Yeah. Well, I suppose there is actually a difference, because people think, I would say, if you heard about a song workshop, you'd think that you'd be going to learn how to write songs, perhaps.
True.
I think.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. Because obviously, if you're playing an instrument, then it's obvious to even to idiots like myself that it takes a lot of practice and effort to learn how to play that instrument. But singing, I don't know, maybe that's just something you're either born with or you're not born with.
Well, I have a little belief. I think that it's actually more simple than that. I do think that we're all able to sing, obviously varying degrees of. But a lot of people are so afraid of having, you know, they think the sound of their voice is so disgusting that they just don't sing. So they say at an early age, I can't sing.
Mm.
And that's it. They spend the rest of their lives never actually doing it. But I've been amazed at how many people think they can't sing. And just the beautiful techniques that we've got in workshops just to open people's voices out makes you realise that just because you think you can't sing, don't not have a go. Because it's only your mind that gets in the way that saying, I can't sing, that makes you not be able to sing. And the minute you start, I know it sounds very, very simple, but we've seen it happen over and over again. The minute you actually believe or you take away the doubt and you just, bloody, I'll get on with it type thing, it's amazing how much it frees the voice. And a lot of people turn out to be actually quite good singers.
So tell me a bit, how do you actually, if someone comes to you and they feel like that about their voice, what sort of practical steps do you take that may help them?
Well, practical steps is we try and get people to, I try and get people to go into the body a bit more, use the body as a chamber of resonance. The example I use is that if you took a cello, just the cello strings without the body of the cello and just plucked them, it would just be a sort of clunking sound. But it's the body and the shape and the hollowness of the cello that makes sound, it's the resonance.
Mm-hmm.
So what we do is show people how to use the body to resonate. And it's extraordinary because it's like coming to singing through a back door, because you spend in the workshops, and someone who never sung before, we spend the first half an hour just mucking around with resonating in the body. And by the time you've gone all the way up through all the different resonances, people are singing.
Yes, yeah, it must be very, very satisfying. That
it's lovely,
but,
lovely.
But you see, I've heard obviously so many people sing over the years, and some people sing consistently out of key, don't they? Out of tune.
Yeah.
And
how do you sort that out?
Can you sort that out?
You can sort it out. It's a lot more work, and the person has to. It's really one of those things where nobody's ever said, or people have probably said you're out of tune, but no one's actually shown them what being in tune feels like.
Yes, and you can see these people sing, like, you know, if they sing in church or whatever, very, very confidently, and in a different key.
Well, like I say, no one's ever shown them how it feels to be in tune. So they're thinking it, they're hearing the tune in their head, they just haven't learned how to get the sound that's in their head to come out of their mouth. And if you've only ever just thrown your voice at what you think it might be, and no one's ever shown you how it feels to sing in tune, you'll never know. But I've had over, I mean, how long have I been teaching? I suppose 20 years I've been teaching. Probably had about 20 people who are really consistently out of tune, no sense of rhythm, no anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of work, but we can eventually get them to do it.
Yes,
But it's, again, it's a lot of hard work. And you have to get... For instance, you would sing a note to somebody, and you get them to sing the note back to you, and if it was lower than your singing, you just gently bring them up with your hand until they're singing the same note as you,
yes.
And you get them to feel what that's like. And it's using the body and not just the ears, I suppose. Very difficult to explain. I'm not really very good with words.
No, it sounds good to me. It sounds great.
Do you ever get the complete opposite of somebody who comes along and is very confident and thinks they're a wonderful singer and then is absolutely rubbish?
Ah, it's interesting that, because you think that they're really confident and think they're a fantastic singer, but when you actually really, really talk to them about it, it's a bluff. They've just covered up because they probably haven't been able to, you know, people have probably tried to say they're out of tune and they haven't been able to handle that criticism. Yeah.
Well, I imagine that they're either like that, or they think they're so good they don't need lessons anyway, so they don't go.
Yeah, probably. At school, actually, I used to teach in a school doing private lessons, and there were a couple of children who thought they were fantastic, but weren't. Mm-hmm. And again, it's only because they were so young, they hadn't really... I recorded them. I thought it was the only way to do it, really. I recorded them and let them listen back gently. I didn't do it sort of all of a sudden, and they went through a bit of a crisis over it, and then you know, accepted that they were out of tune, and then we worked on it.
On a lonely station platform, I watched the swallows in the sun. Stepped into a world where life had just. From a window by the coachyard, where the swallows flew around, my ears thrilled to the swallows' song and no other sound. And everywhere go now, no matter what I do, when I watch the swallows, I will think of you, of a beauty that intrigues me, I want so very much, a beauty I'll approach but never. Thank you.
So how would you compare the buzz that you get from teaching to the buzz you get from performing?
Wow, how do you compare? Okay, the buzz from teaching is for me, it just feels like a completely sharing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And getting a whole bunch of people together singing in harmony, where no one's thinking about themselves, everyone is just concentrating on the one goal, really, the song. That's such an amazingly fabulous buzz, and it makes me cry, it's so lovely. But the buzz out of performing, I think the buzz from performing comes from having made it to the end, and you're still alive.
and you survived, did you say?
Survived, and everyone had a good time. But, I mean, sometimes I don't get a buzz from performing. I just feel very disappointed in myself sometimes with performing.
Mm. Yes, it's a strange animal, isn't it, the whole process of performing, because it changes so much. And
it's fascinating.
Yes.
It's absolutely fascinating.
It is, and sometimes terrifying, sometimes incredibly fulfilling.
Well, yeah, and on a much more, with the singing workshops, we do a lot of work on fear, and just get people to taste a little bit of fear and actually deal with it. Because one of the things I say is the fear never goes, you just learn how to stop it just crippling you. But I think just by doing something that scares you, they say that, don't they? Do something that scares you, and it actually improves your self-esteem. It's really true.
Well, so it makes you know you're alive, that's for sure.
Yeah, perhaps that's it. Yeah.
Mm. Ken's into naked bungee jumping at the moment for that very reason.
Well done. Yes, I'd quite like to see that. Oh, would I?
Trust me,
you wouldn't.
You wouldn't.
He's already seen it.
Yes, you can see that on Ken's website, www.nakedguitarist.com. So what's in the pipeline next, Abby? You got tours coming up, or more recording? Or?
Yeah, I'm sort of starting to chew on another album, actually, is what's happening. But Angelic has just released this Low Summer, so it's not really an album out just yet. But possibly a tour. I do the odd gig here and there, really, with my wonderful band, because I have to admit I prefer playing with the band than on my own.
I mean, would you consider yourself fairly prolific as a writer?
Oh, now that's a very tough question. I recently accepted that I think my music is way more advanced than my songwriting. You know, my ability to arrange and hear melodies and harmonies, and I actually find words quite tricky.
Mm-hmm.
So prolific, I'm not sure. It pours out in lots of directions, but not words.
But if you have an album that you're aiming to do within a certain space of time, you can usually get stuck in and write the material. Yeah.
Songwriting for me usually came from, sadly, from sort of emotional turmoil, and I felt like I really need to express myself somehow, and I didn't know how to. Mm. So yeah, it's one of those awful things. If I'm too happy, I don't really write. I suppose you all recognise that.
Well, yeah, possibly. So maybe it's a bit like the old inspiration perspiration analogy, you know. Things can inspire, you can get ideas, but it takes so much more to actually complete a piece and
doesn't it?
Give it a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I'm quite lazy. I am, actually. I'm very lazy.
It's New Year's Eve, and it's snowing, wind is blowing, and it's drifting. Time to look forward, time to reflect, but live in the moment, don't ever forget. Never forget who you are. It's easy to lose yourself. were smiling, slipping and sliding down the road. As they go by my window, fireworks sparkle, lighting the sky. Memories fade into nothing like the mountains behind. Never.
New Year's Eve, there we go, there's a nice little story. Yeah, that was me sort of fancied doing a bit of navel gazing and spent a whole week over the New Year period. I went and stayed in a B&B up in the Lake District and spent a whole week on my own, fantastic. And it sounds a bit, party pooper and all that kind of stuff, but it was the most wonderful New Year's Eve I've ever had. It was just fabulous. And sitting there, that's it. The whole week I'd been there trying to write this song, it was a labour of love about oak trees and stuff, and it wasn't really happening. And then on New Year's Eve, just having had a lovely evening, I was just sitting in my B&B with the snow falling, and out came that little song. And it means a lot to me, that song, because it was just so simple, and it just pinged out. And it's just that thing about songs, isn't it? You can sit there working, slaving away, and nothing really happens. And then out came this little one. So that's quite sweet. Quite good, because that's, again, it's not really so much of a story to this one, but it's one of the things that I think drive people mad about me is that my eternal positivity, and that I can turn anything into something positive. And that song is actually about when something really rubbish is happening to you and life is really grim, you can actually take a little bit of solace, because you think, the more suffering I do, that means that something really good is about to happen. So I call it money in the bank for something really good around the corner. So that's what Better Days is about. A ridiculously positive song.
Well, it's like an anti-blues then, isn't it? You don't have the blues, you have the greens.
Pinks. It's pinks.
Yeah, the pinks, yeah. You're in the pink. Absolutely fantastic.
In the pink, that'll do, yeah.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Abby.
Great talking to you too.
Thank you very much.
Indeed, great.
Thank you very much for being on Folkcast.
Thank you.
I'm learning something, money in the bank for better days. Don't know love. Don't know. We'll be right back.
You have been listening to a Folkcast interview special presented by Ken Nicol and Phil Widows, with our special guest, Abby Lathe, and featuring music from Abby's albums Low Summer and Avebury. For the latest news on Abby, her music, shows and teaching, please visit abbylathe.co.uk, where you can also buy her albums. This podcast was released on November the 3rd, 2007. Folkcast, the podcast from the UK, bringing you the best from the worlds of folk, folk rock, singer-songwriter, and roots-based music. Keep focused on Folkcast via folkcast.co.uk.